Hey, Bill, how are you?
Oh, doing all right, Glenn. Mike, Steve, how's it going?
Good week?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
No injuries, no damages, nobody beaten up, so that always helps.
Yeah, just, we're rolling on Denver now. We've got a lot of work to do, so today's a big day for us. Once we find out who we're playing and get out there on the field tomorrow and start getting ready.
Did you see anything different in that game? James Faurier, after the game, said that the tendencies that they were looking at, especially with the run, that Denver was doing some different things. Did you see anything different that they were doing from 3-4 weeks ago?
Well, they change it up every week, and they do a good job of changing it up within the game, too. Once they see what's going on, they do a nice job of adjusting their running game and their play-action game to what the defense is giving them. So I think you see their offensive adjustments on a weekly basis.
How much of your film preparation will come from that game or from the last 3 or 4 games they've played?
Yeah, I think all of them. I think they have a good combination of plays and play actions and some deceptives and all that. So they give you a lot to get ready for. They can be in the their wildcat type game just as easily as they can be in their sub passing game with him at quarterback. So you don't know whether he's a runner or a thrower or both. So there's a lot to get ready for. But I don't think they try to reinvent their offense every week. They just have different ways of attacking different spots, and if you take one away, then they're going to try to get to another one.
I know coaches usually watch the game a lot differently than the rest of us. You watch it on the all 22 sometimes, but when you're watching that game, did you watch that game yesterday, or are you going to go back and look at it from a coach's perspective? I know you don't.
Oh yeah,
it
no,
as
we,
much
yeah,
on
no,
TV.
We definitely saw the watched coach's film this morning, this afternoon. But I watched a good part of the game yesterday.
What'd you think of the end? Did you think we were going to get into one of those? This is the first opportunity for the new overtime rules, and 11 seconds later it was moot.
Yeah, it was interesting to see, conceptually how that would play out, because again, that's something that it's a whole new set of rules that, as you said, we've never even played under. But T-Bone Thomas took care of that in a hurry. So that's the story on Thomas too. I mean, he's a big, strong, fast guy, and if he gets the ball in those slants or in cuts or slim posts or whatever it is, if you don't make the tackle, there's not a lot of guys that can catch him. So he's an explosive player, and Tim made a great throw, and that was it.
Glenn makes fun of me on a lot of issues for a lot of things, but one of the things he makes fun of me for is what a Tebow fan I am. I'm a huge fan of his. I just think in the last 6 weeks I've seen improvement. I've seen him do things. I saw him do things yesterday that wasn't necessarily doing a month ago or 2 months ago. Have you seen a dramatic improvement in Tim Tebow this season?
I think he's done a good job. I mean, he does a lot of things well. I mean, he throws a great deep ball. He's a hard guy to tackle. He's good in a running game, good with play action. So I'm sure his confidence and his timing and all that's gotten better. But, over the last 2 months, that team's played pretty good football. 9-2, or I don't know, whatever they are, but they've won a lot of games over that in that stretch, and some of it's productive offense, some of it's defense, special teams, but the combination of all those things, and a lot of that falls to the quarterback. I mean, he's responsible for managing the team and getting them to win whatever it takes, and Tebow's good at that. He whatever it takes to win, he's done a good job of doing it.
Looked like Pittsburgh had their safeties up on the line an awful lot. Matter of fact, on that last play where they got burned, wide receiver goes in motion, and that gets Mundy to come up on that line of scrimmage. Is that something you saw an awful lot of where they were playing that and got burned on the backside?
Well, I think Pittsburgh was doing that. They did it at different points during the game. It looked like they were doing that to take care of the option. And that play-action pass went away from Polamalu, as they all did. So I think that's the way Denver tried to set it up was, they saw Pittsburgh playing the safeties down, one on each side to handle the option, and they play action and wanted to, I looked like they wanted to throw it away from Polamalu, and they did.
When you mentioned that you don't know with their personnel groups whether they're in the wildcat or the spread offense, how can you adapt defensively? Is it simply a personnel adaptation, or is it a defensive call adaptation when they show up in that offense?
Well, I think you know, whenever Tebow's in the shotgun, then you have the possibility of him running their regular shotgun passing game, mm-hmm. and you also have the possibility of them running the ball, whether he's the runner or whether it's a dive and he keeps it, or, you know, all the wildcat type plays. So it's tough to defend because you know, the quarterback as the runner or wildcat, however you want to call it, you really need another defender in the running game, but it's hard to get that defender when you have five guys, sometimes five guys spread out in the passing game. It's hard to, you know, bring those guys in there to help. So, you know, you get into a disguise game, or you get into a take one thing away and hope you can hold up on the other, that type of deal. But they put a lot of pressure on you there because they can do a lot of things. He's a versatile player, and he can hurt you in a lot of different ways. I mean, throw 50-yard passes or carry the ball in inside zone and power plays. So it's you know, it's a lot to defend.
Are they trying to dictate your personnel in that situation, or does it matter to them?
Well, they have different personnel combinations in there. Sometimes they'll be in three receivers. Sometimes they'll be in two receivers. But, you know, and then you have to match up to the same plays from different personnel groups. So sometimes you're in nickel. Sometimes you're in regular. You might be in dime on some of that. And it's just, you know, it's the same plays for them, but it's different for you. You have to match up to it differently. So they do a good job of that. They've done a nice job offensively of you know, seeing what the defense is doing and knowing that the defense can't get a lot ready because, you know, Denver's such a hard team to prepare for. They're so different, really, offensively than most every other team in the league. And so you can't do a million different things. You do a few, and then they see what those are, and then they know how to attack them.
It's not uncommon for you to have a coordinator leave during the season and take another job. It happened with Charlie Weiss in 2004 going to Notre Dame. And now with Billy O'Brien going to Penn State, although he'll be here until the season is over, he has Josh McDaniels here to help him out. Was it the same story in 04 and we didn't know about it? You know, Charlie had taken the job, and did McDaniels's responsibilities increase at that time where he could take some of the load off of Charlie, or did just Charlie continue as usual and you're saying, well, we'll deal with it, we'll manage the situation?
Well, Josh was working with the quarterbacks that year, but you know, Charlie was here. He didn't leave. He stayed here and worked both jobs. And I thought that it was, you know, it was a fairly smooth operation on our end. So hopefully it'll be the same thing this time.
It make you nervous? I mean, because he's got so much. Whether the Penn State scandal had happened or not, just the fact of putting together a staff and then National Signing Day, did it make you a little nervous that, you know, you've got this guy, he's got responsibilities here, but also has to put together a program there?
Well, Bill and I have talked about it, and you know, Bill's a smart guy. He works hard. He's shown great loyalty to our program, and I know that this is an important season to him, as they all are, and that he wants to do everything he can to help the team like we all do, and I think he'll do that, so I'm not really worried about it.
Is it an ideal situation to have Josh here because of the set of circumstances?
Well, it worked out that way, but I don't know.
Is there going to be a big change in Bill O'Brien's routine during the week?
No.
No? And Josh is just going to add to the mix?
He'll help, and I'm sure he'll be able to help in many different ways. So,
getting back to Tebow, Bill, is the ideal situation to try to contain him and keep him in that pocket and not let him get to the outside where he seems to be far more dangerous?
Well, if he gets out of the pocket, then you have a kind of a dual threat. I mean, he can run, he can throw. You know, he hurt us in our game. He scrambled out and ran for about 30 yards or something like that, whatever it was. He had a big play. He scrambled out on third down and converted. So, you know, when he gets outside the pocket, he's definitely a threat there. But at the same time, you can't just stand there and wait for him and let him sit in the pocket and throw either. So you've got to be aggressive, but maintain leverage and keep vision on him and hope he doesn't get out there too cleanly.
Almost seems like he bounces off of people at times because he's so big and strong and physical. You know,
yeah, he's really strong. He's got great lower body strength. He takes a lot of hits and can stay up. Has good balance, but he's strong. I mean, he's like a running back. You know, 200, whatever, 35, 40 pounds, and very, very, very strong, well built, and he could take a pounding, and he has his whole career, collegiately. So, he runs the ball with good power. It's not like a quarterback back there. It's like a running back. So, like I said, he has the element of a wildcat running game to a spread out passing game, all in the same formation and all in the same play, really, because they can check from one to another. So it's hard to defend, and he's a tough guy to defend.
It's interesting because they do run the ball quite a bit, and they have an unusual running style compared to other teams in the league. It used to be with the Broncos, you always thought of the one cut system they had, and defensive linemen used to complain about them. They cut you in a minute. How much of that have they retained? Is it a similar style at all than that they had in, say, when Shanahan was there for all those years, and even before Shanahan in some ways?
Right. I think, they still have some zone runs, but it's not like, you watch Houston play this weekend. I mean, that's the old Denver offense that Coach Kubiak runs. So they have some zone runs, and they have some, they have some other plays, but they have a lot of really option kind of runs where they can either give it to the dive back, or the quarterback can keep it, and occasionally they run the triple option where it's dive, quarterback, pitch, and all those different combinations of things with the play actions, with their regular conventional running game and their conventional passing game, because there's some elements of those plays too. Again, the bottom line is that it gives you a lot to defend defensively, so even when they line up in the formation, it's not like you can check to a call like you could when you see a running back go back there and he becomes the quarterback. It's a totally different situation, and it's that they have a lot of versatility in what they can do, and so defensively you have to be ready to defend a lot of different things.
Defensively, they seem very aggressive at times, and sometimes they look like they're a different team. Do you expect them to sell out to get to Tom, or do you expect them to try to drop off much?
Well, they really do a good job of both, Steve. They run a lot of tight man-to-man. They run a lot of four-man pressure, sometimes five-man pressure, sometimes six-man pressure, and sometimes it's based on whether one of the backs or tight ends blocked, and they just add into the rush and come on that, and then they'll drop off and they'll play some two-deep zone, or sometimes even rush three and play two-deep zone. So, those create problems for you offensively, because you're trying to run one type of play that, against man-to-man coverage and against pressure, and then you get a three-man rush or you get a four-man rush and they go to zone, and the patterns, the distribution's different, and the quarterback's reads are different. So they do a good job of mixing those up. They run some, other coverages as well, but those are the two main things they do. They play a lot of tight man-to-man coverage, and then they play a lot of split safety zone coverage, but they mix in some other things, so they kind of keep you off balance, and the defenses complement each other, and they have good defensive backs, particularly Bailey and Goodman, who can get up there and play man-to-man, or they can back off and play zone and read the quarterback and anticipate routes and that kind of thing. So it's again, in the passing game, you've got to do a good job. You can't be sloppy against them, or you'll be paying for it.
Von Miller that good, or is he a beneficiary of Dumervil on the other side?
No, I think they complement each other well. They're both very good. Miller's really fast. He's got a good motor. He plays hard. He makes a lot of plays from the backside, as does Dumervil. They're both very good. They're both strong and quick. They run the edge. They can come inside, and they can both power rush. I've got some other athletic players up there with them, like Ayers and Thomas and Bunkley and guys like that. So it's a fast defensive line, a fast front, very athletic and active, and they don't stay blocked for very long. So they do a good job. Miller's good. I mean, I can't imagine. There's not too many guys better than him as rookies or even as veterans playing that position.
He's adjusted with the cast on his hand. I know it's different. He can't use his hands like he wants to, but that doesn't take away his speed, does it?
No, it doesn't. He's been very effective with that cast, a lot more than what I thought he would be, because he had that injury before we played him, and then in watching him play, thinking he was going to be playing with one hand, you think, okay, well, this is really going to limit his effectiveness, but it really didn't limit it very much. And he's still very productive and still fast and counters well and makes a lot of tackles. And just in watching the last few weeks, he continues to do that. He's played very aggressively, you know, even though he's had the hand injury.
Do they move him around a lot, Bill?
No, not too much. They move him around a little bit, but for the most part, he lines up on the offensive right. Dumervil's on the offensive left. Occasionally, they'll line him up inside or in the middle and do something with him, either blitz him or run him on a game or something like that. So they will do it, but most of the time, he's on the offensive right and Dumervil's on the left, and those are two very good edge rushers.
I wonder how you approach this. It had nothing to do with the Patriots, but I was watching all the games this weekend, and in a couple of situations, there were challenges or almost challenges of plays. And I remember in a couple of games, you think you're waiting for a challenge and come back, and I'm going to simplify it, but this is the bottom line. The official said, yeah, you may be right, but that's not challengeable. So you know your team should be benefiting from something, but it's something that they can't challenge because a whistle was blown or that's not the kind of play. I mean, how frustrating is that as a head coach where you know that your team should be taking advantage of a mistake by the officials or another team's mistake, but you can't because of the challenge system?
Right. Well, I mean, that's been a tough situation. You know, every time they put in a new rule to make a play reviewable so that it can correct a mistake from a previous game that happened or something like that, then that adds, you know, multiple scenarios that go with it. So it doesn't just take care of that one play, but there are other plays that factor into it. And so, the play in the Denver-Pittsburgh game where Roethlisberger threw the pass, which certainly looked like a lateral pass to me, but the ruling was when Coach Fox challenged it, I think what they told him was, well, you can challenge it, but you can't get the ball because we ruled it an incomplete pass. So the best you could get would be like a 2-yard loss because of, you know, where the ball was thrown and then not caught. And, okay, it was a lateral, not a forward pass, but you can't get the ball. And so if you want that 2 yards, you could challenge that. And I think Coach Fox elected not to challenge it and just took the incomplete pass and kept the challenge. Had they let the play go and called it a lateral pass or called it a fumble, then, or called it a completed pass and called it a fumble so that the play extended, then it could have been challenged. Then, you know, they could have gone back and sorted it out and you know, whatever happened. But since they ruled it incomplete, then the ruling is that you can't defensively gain possession of the ball on an incomplete pass, but you could gain some yardage in that case. So, but it gets tricky. And then, you know, we saw a couple other plays where the ball's loose across
Detroit,
the line of scrimmage.
Detroit, New Orleans.
Right, and then you see guys diving for the ball, and nobody realizes that it's potentially a live ball. So I don't know if there were injuries on the play or not, but there certainly could have been, you know, in terms of the whole player safety discussion. So, you know, you got a ball rolling around on the field. Not everybody knows if it's a live ball or not a live ball. You know, guys diving for it, falling on the back of other players' legs. The whistle blows, but that doesn't stop the play because it's loose. So there are a lot of things that can make the plays complicated, and we know this is a very fast game, and ball takes a lot of funny bounces, and that's what makes football great. But the rules are, you know, every time they add a rule, there are ramifications to it. I mean, it's just like the playoff rule on the overtime. You know, that was a 7-page rule. We got a memo from the league, like every team does, you know, just a reminder, the playoff, you know, overtime rules have changed. Okay, and it's 7 pages. So
how do they fit 7 pages into that rule? That is unbelievable.
Yeah, well, I mean, because there's a million things that could happen. You could have a safety. You could have a punt that's caught and returned and then fumbled. Is that a possession? Is an onside kick a possession? Is it, you know, what's a possession? What isn't? And so forth. So it just goes on and on and on. And I've been around the game a long time, but it's not an easy rule for me to digest. And I'm sure if I had to, you know, really take a test on it, I probably would get a couple things wrong on that because it's a very complex rule. So, you know, for the average fan that's watching the game, I mean, it's one thing if, okay, the team goes down, kicks a field goal, okay, the other team gets the ball, and then they drive down and, you know, they kick a field goal, you know, that's the easy part. But you start getting into interceptions and fumbles and onside kicks and
safety.
Muffs and safety, you know, and all. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things in the scoring game that could happen that, you know, you have to take into account because there's so much at stake there. But then it becomes, you know, very complicated. And, you know, strategically, it's hard to account for all those things because there's, you know, the volume of them is so extensive. So, you know, when you got a rule that's a simple rule, but now it's, you know, it's 7 pages long, you know, it's not really that simple anymore. And then, you know, like I'm trying to explain it to our team, but, you know, I mean, what, you know, I mean, what, who, you know, who understands a seven-page rule except for the officials?
Darius Thomas went into the runway after that touchdown not realizing that he had just won the game.
Yeah.
Didn't think the game was over.
Well, is there an obvious difference or in your approach to overtime now?
Absolutely. Sure. I mean, instead of going down and just say Thomas had been tackled on the 3-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now what? You know, I mean, normally you just kick the field goal and you know, you
right.
could win the game. But now if you kick the field goal, then the other team gets the ball, or, you know, say it's 4th and goal on the 1. You know, a touchdown wins it. And if you don't pick it up, then they get the ball, but they're 99 yards away and all that. But the whole strategy changes. Then the other team gets the ball first. They come down and kick a field goal. Okay, now they kick off to you. Well, you're in 4-down territory the entire mm-hmm. way. You're in 4-down territory in your own 20-yard line because you've got to score or the game's over. So that definitely changes the strategy. Like, you would never punt in that situation. So, you know, there are things that are different that with no practice, you can't practice them because mm-hmm. during the regular season, that, you know, none of that could come up. And so it's, you know, it just changes a lot of strategy with really no, you know, no preparation, no practice, or really not a thorough understanding of the rule either. I mean, I have trouble with it. I'm sure our players would have trouble with it. I'm sure any players would have trouble with it.
I'm having trouble with it, and I've been there. Yeah,
that's right.
Well, believe me, I've read it, and I'm having trouble with it.
The most obvious thing was that it didn't even occur to me was, of course, now all of a sudden every series is 4 downs. I didn't even think about that. That's such common sense when you put it that way. But you don't even think of that. You don't even think of, okay, now you got 4 downs to score touchdowns on the whole drive.
Well, and you know how it is in overtime. If the other team has the ball and they're across midfield, you know, then you've got you can't afford to give up any yardage because they're so close to field goal mm-hmm. range. But, you know, once they get in field goal range, as long as they don't score a touchdown, you know, you're at least going to get the ball back. And so that would change your defensive strategy and calls and, you know, how you would play that in the, you know, once they cross the 50 and get close to field goal range. Because if you can, obviously, in the regular season overtime, you know, you're doing everything you can just to keep them from having a field goal attempt. But, you know, I don't know if that's as critical now in the playoff overtime rules. I mean, you could give up on a field goal attempt as long as you don't give up a touchdown, and at least you get the ball back.
It's interesting. If Denver loses that game yesterday, obviously it's treated a lot different, that call in the course of the game. But you've done this for a long time. They keep on tweaking these rules. But are they ever going to get it perfect? Is there any perfection? I mean, we can look at this year or last year where they review all the scoring plays. But we had a situation in Detroit a couple weeks ago where they ran out of challenges and the ball actually did go into the end zone and they did not get credit for it. And obviously you couldn't go to the replay because it wasn't within the last 2 minutes of a quarter. Are we ever going to get this stuff perfect, or do we just kind of go along with what we've got?
Right. Well, I mean, I think that was the old system was, hey, you live with some human error, you know, by officials, just like you live with it with players that drop passes or coaches that, you know, make mistakes and lose track of things. I mean, that's part of the game too. So they were trying to eliminate some of that with the officials. But again, for everything you correct, there are a lot of corollaries and branches that come off that trunk that you got to take into consideration too. And it does get complicated. But you know, calls like the lateral there, I mean, that's pretty clear cut. I don't really see how you miss that. I mean, you're standing on the line of scrimmage and you see the quarterback throw the ball. I mean, you should be able to tell whether that ball is going parallel to the line of scrimmage or going backwards. I mean, that to me, that's not a hard. There's a lot harder calls than that, but you know, at the time, I mean, when I looked at the play at the time, I said, you know, my God, that's a, you know, it's a free ball, it's a lateral, and they ruled an incomplete pass, and I mean, I don't think that one really was very close, but you know, it's like when they put in the rule this year about the scoring plays. You know, people brought up, well, you know, what about the guy who dives for the goal line and they mark it down at the 1-inch line?
Right.
Well, why don't we review that too? Well, because it's not a score. All right. Well, why don't we review all plays, you know, inside the 1-yard line if it gets buzzed by the official upstairs? Well, you know, no, that might slow the game down too much. You know, so I mean, you know, there's an argument for everything, but you know, maybe that's the next thing is, you know, are we gonna review plays that get inside the 1-yard line that don't score? You know, just like we're reviewing scoring plays. So, you know, I think the whole argument's just, you know, do we want to get it right? Yes, you know, we want to get it right. We want the right team to win based on, you know, the way the game's played. But at what cost? How many, you know, how many reviews? How many times do we have to look at it? How many, you know? And then you go to the college rule. I mean, the college rule, it's all out of the coach's hands. It's all, you know, the official upstairs. If he sees something that doesn't look right, then they review it. And he has the call on that, as opposed to in the NFL where, you know, the referee makes the call. So, you know, there are a lot of different ways to do it. And you know, I'm sure the people a lot smarter than me are talking about all those and trying to figure out what the best one is for this league. So I don't really know.
Well, here's a question that's not as complicated as the overtime question, and that comes from Barbara and Barbara Albanese of Reading. Barbara says, Nick Saban goes for another national championship tonight, and Romeo Crennel just got the head coaching job in Kansas City. Do you have a certain sense of pride in seeing guys that you coach with or guys who coach under you having so much success in their careers? And before you answer, I have to say, the coach's question of the week is brought to you by Alexis of Watertown. And so go ahead.
Thanks. Well, yeah, Barbara, that's that is a much easier question, so thank you. Yeah, of course, you know, I take, you know, I have a lot of friends in the coaching business, people that I've worked with or and that have helped me along the way, and of course I want to see them do well. So, you know, I'm happy for Romeo. I think he's really one of the best coaches I've worked with and does a great job. And of course, Nick Saban is, you know, as good as any coach I've ever worked with. I've said that many times. The 4 years we were together at Cleveland, I mean, I learned an awful lot of football from him, and we had a great relationship. And I just think he does a tremendous job, whether it was then at Michigan State, LSU, of course, coaching against him with the Dolphins, and, you know, and now at Alabama. I mean, he's a tremendous coach on every level. So he's a personal friend, and of course, I hope he does well, and I hope Romeo does well. Never at our expense, but that being said, of course you root for them.
So you got Alabama tonight over LSU?
Well, I got to root for Nick. I mean, it's, you know, two great football teams, and I'm sure it'll be a war.
You know, will they score more than 12 points from the last game?
Who knows?
Yeah. You know,
well, you know, I mean, I think when you look at college football, and that's one of the things that as a scout, you know, we look at is, you know, here's two teams that haven't played in 6 weeks. And, you know, a lot of times in scouting, you go back to that bowl game, you know, because you know you're seeing good competition. Whatever player you're watching, you're watching against another good team. And the problem is that they haven't played in 6 weeks, you know, which is never an NFL situation. I mean, we never get that kind of 5 weeks, whatever it is. You know, you never get that kind of break in between games. So, you know, sometimes I think it's hard to evaluate players in bowl games, hard to evaluate teams in bowl games for that matter, when there's been such a gap between where they were playing at the end of November and then where they're playing on January 1st or January 9th or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, that's a big gap for the quality of game that this is. You know, that's a long time in between games and, you know, losing your rhythm and your timing and all that. You know, sometimes you make mistakes on that. You look at a bowl game, a guy doesn't play well, he drops a couple passes and all that. Well, you know, I haven't been playing for 6 weeks, so... you know, sometimes that affects it.
You know what? I'm not. I know you guys don't.
Yeah,
there's
a fly. There's a fly in here. If you get that,
yeah.
And you can't catch it.
Yeah, we'll
I can't
it.
Catch
I'll
it.
I'll get it with this this copy here.
This fly's
I'll get it.
Drive me crazy.
But I know you guys don't do this. If you wanted to, with scouting, you have one stop shopping. This game tonight, the amount of pros.
Oh yeah, yeah.
In this
absolutely.
Game, it's
loaded.
Just going to be off the charts. I mean, I'm talking about guys who won't even be playing in the game. Red shirts to the seniors. We're talking, you know, 70, 80 guys.
Yeah, well, I don't know if quite that many, but it'd be an awful lot.
It might
be.
But you, how about?
Well,
this?
I'm saying because there's guys playing that won't be draft eligible this year, but they'll be draft eligible next year or the year after. Yeah, absolutely.
That no USC, question. Remember that the USC Texas game, Vince Young scored.
Right, right.
I think there were 60. The number was like 60 or 70 pros in that game. Not all of them were great. Right. You know, some were practice squad, but.
Those two schools will have recruits on the sideline that might end up in the pros.
Yeah, right, sure.
The way they recruit.
Sure. Yeah, well, it's like when we drafted Seymour in 01, that entire defense is in the pros. You know, Champ Bailey, and he had come out a year earlier, but, you know, all those guys, Stroud and Seymour and Kendrell Bell and, you know, Witherspoon and Champ Bailey and, you know, and then the lineman Grant, all the, I mean, the whole team literally was in the NFL by the time they had all graduated. So, yeah, I mean, and I'm sure the same will be true of this. Well, I mean, the whole Alabama defense looks like it's headed for the NFL next year and probably half of the LSU defense, too.
I think one of them has given up 14 touchdowns all season long, and the other team has given up 12.
I mean, it's going to be great. I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's amazing. Well, good question, Barbara, for being selected. You win a $100 gift certificate to Sports Authority. The coach's question of the week is presented by Lexus of Watertown. Lexus of Watertown invites you to a new level of excellence. 1-800-GO-LEXUS. Submit your question for the coach at weei.com/coach. Weekly winners will receive that $100 gift certificate to Sports Authority. Enter at weei.com/coach for your chance to win.
Bill, good luck on Saturday night. We'll see you back here on Monday.
All right. Yeah, let's hope so. Okay.
Have a good one.
Thanks,
Bill.
Thanks, Michael.
All right,
bye.
Bill Belichick right here on the Big Show on Patriots Monday.